Hi, and welcome to the special edition of the Macro Show, where we're going to take an in-depth look at the plumbing of the banking system to see how a roll-off of the Treasury General account and too much money in the banking system is causing a problem. I'm your host, Steve Van Meter, and thanks for joining me. And we're going to start out by looking at a report from the U.S. Treasury and going through it so you can actually see behind the scenes that even they know there's a problem and how it's likely to play out in the markets. Let's get started. So this report is from the Treasury Borrowing Advisory Committee on February 2nd of 2021. And let's go through the executive summary because it's really interesting. Large-scale asset purchases. Now, this is QE. So when you see LSAP, just in your mind, this is quantitative easing by the Fed and in turn reserve creation, which is what quantitative easing or LSAPs do, have contributed to a favorable backdrop for Treasury issuance. So all the Treasury is saying is, look, we can get away with issuing more Treasuries because the Fed is buying them indirectly. Now, not directly at auction, but indirectly through the banking system. Reserves or bank reserves are projected to increase sharply in 2021, driven by the continuation of LSAPs. So effectively, reserves are going to increase dollar for dollar based on how much QE the Fed is doing and reduction in the Treasury General account balance. Reserve creation leads to deposit growth in the banking system, which in turn leads to increased bank demand for treasuries. That's interesting because, you know, the market's perception is nobody wants them, but you can see very clearly that this leads to an increase in demand for treasuries. The current period of reserve creation is resulting in a buildup of excess liquidity. Now, you never hear this about the banking system, but here it's coming directly from the U.S. Treasury that there's too much liquidity on bank balance sheets. It also coincides with a period of historically low yields, so low treasury yields, and low credit spreads. Now, isn't that interesting? The opposite of what everyone thinks should be happening. We project sharp increases in bank securities purchases. Now, do keep in mind, when you see securities, they're not referring to equities. They are referring to bonds, either U.S. Treasury securities or mortgage-backed securities, with a significant portion in the short to intermediate treasuries. This is interesting. We'll dig into this a little bit later, and you'll start to understand why there is such demand at the short end of the curve right now. Reserve growth should also be supportive of non-bank private sector demand for treasuries. So saying even outside of the banking system, there should be an increase in demand for treasuries. Notably, continued growth in reserves is likely to bolster money market fund balances and lead to an increased demand for T-bills. This is part of the problem that's going on right now, is the increased demand in T-bills, and as you'll see, the reduction in issuance. However, continued growth in reserves negatively impacts Tier 1 leverage, SLR, and GSIB surcharge calculations, and should constrain bank balance sheet capacity for repo and treasury inventory. So what is Tier 1 leverage? Well, Tier 1 leverage ratio, it measures a bank's core capital to its total assets. The ratio uses Tier 1 capital to judge how leveraged a bank in relation to its consolidated assets, whereas the Tier 1 capital ratio measures a bank's core capital against its risk-weighted assets. We'll come back to the SLR ratio in a second. The GSIB capital surcharge is another capital buffer that the largest domestic banks are required to hold over and above the minimum risk-based capital requirements and other capital buffers. The surcharge is based on each bank's systemic score, defined as a weighted sum of selected bank characteristics. So how about what's going on with the SLR ratio? Well, you might remember back to last year, April 2020, the Federal Reserve Board announced this temporary change to a supplementary leverage ratio, SLR rule, to ease strains in the Treasury market resulting from the coronavirus and increased banking organizations' ability, now keep in mind, to provide credit to households and businesses. So the key part is, what are they doing here? Last year is trying to increase credit to households and businesses. So we look through here, and on Wednesday, they announced a temporary change to the SLR rule. The change would exclude U.S. Treasury securities and deposits at Federal Reserve banks, which is reserve assets, from the calculation of the rule for holding companies, and will be in effect until March 31st, 2021. Keep in mind when this is. So what this means is when this rule goes away, you can expect it's going to reduce credit to households and businesses, perhaps at a very bad time. Okay, let's go on to the next section here. Reserve balances at the Fed are set to increase sharply over the next 2 years. This is no surprise. Continued asset purchases by the Fed will lead to significant additional growth in reserve balances. Well, that's what it is. LSAP's increase reserve assets. So that makes perfect sense. The Treasury General account is likely to decline, well, we know it's going to, from its current elevated level and result in an increase in reserve balances. Historically, the TGA balance has been much smaller, and we will assume it reverts to $800 billion by the end of 2021. It might actually be around $300 to $400 billion by summer of 2021, as suggested by previous Treasury borrowing estimate announcements. So we do know it has to decrease, and there are legal reasons it has to do that. LSAPs are projected to continue at current pace in 2021 before tapering in 2022. This is probably a fantasy by the Treasury and the Fed. Reality is LSAPs are probably not decreasing anytime soon, but they're going to be optimistic that the economy is going to start recovering in 2022 is what you're seeing here. Finally, we assume currency grows at the rate of nominal GDP in 21 and 2022. In the median scenario, we project reserve balances to increase by over $2.1 trillion in 2021 and about $500 billion in 2022. So what they're saying is the current QE is going to run at its current run rate for the 2021, and then there's this expectation that's going to go down significantly in 2022. I find that reduction very optimistic, but nevertheless, well, this is just their report. We'll see how much that comes true. So reserve creation by the Fed has contributed to a significant increase in deposits in the banking system. And we talked about this as the demand for money has increased because there's really no alternative. You know, why go out and put your money out in a five-year CD when cash is effectively paying the same rate? Why tie your money up? So large-scale asset purchases by the Fed are funded by creating reserves. So again, anyone who thinks there's money printing going on, here it is from the Treasury, that there is no money printing occurring. When the Fed purchases security from a non-bank private sector entity, it results in the creation of a bank deposit. So it is possible through QE, when a Treasury is from a non-bank source, it will lead to a creation of a deposit in the M2 money supply. Now, it doesn't mean it stays there long. It just means it creates a deposit there. So when banks make loans or purchase treasuries, it also results in the creation of bank deposits. Deploying reserves into loans or treasuries has a multiplier effect on deposit creation. Past periods of reserve creation have resulted in large increases in bank deposits. So essentially, hey, this big increase in the M2, well, it has something to do with the big increase in quantitative easing and the Fed's balance sheet. It doesn't mean that there is a direct relationship where when the Fed does an LSAP or QE that it turns into the M2. It's just saying reserve creation results in an increase in bank deposits. Because again, if there was 8% money out there on a bond, people would take money out of the M2 and go buy the bond. There is no alternative when interest rates are really low. Until 2007, deposits in the banking system had increased in line with loans. Since the inception of LSAP's, deposit growth has consistently and significantly outpaced the rate of loan growth. So what you're seeing is lower interest rates and lower credit spreads lead to less lending, something we've covered before. Furthermore, these deposits in recent years have tended to be sticky and has largely stayed in the banking system, meaning money's not moving, which we know based on the velocity of money. In the median scenario, we project about $2.6 trillion of increases in deposits in the U.S. banking system. Probably going to be more than that. Now, rapid deposit growth in the banking system is likely to create demand for duration. So bank deposits and liabilities are typically at negative duration to the bank's balance sheet. So banks typically hedge the duration risk associated with deposits by buying or originating fixed rate assets or via the use of derivatives. So now keep in mind as we go through this, there's not enough treasury bills or too much money in the banking system because the banks need to hedge this risk by matching those liabilities with an asset. So deposits created in a period of increasing reserves tend to be large institutional deposits or non-core. These deposits tend to exhibit higher runoff rates and greater repricing sensitivity to rate changes than traditional retail deposits and hence have a shorter duration. There are significant differences in model duration for deposit cohorts. Traditional retail deposits durations range from 3 to 7 years. Keep this in mind, 3 to 7 years, while non-core deposits durations are 2 years. So estimates of deposit duration. Now remember, if you're thinking of this as a bank, you have to asset match this very significantly across banking institutions. Therefore, we estimate demand under different duration assumptions. Using a 2-year duration estimate, we project demand of 1.3 to 2 trillion in 3-year equivalents. Now, when you go and look at what's going on in the bond market, you'll notice that 3-year, 2-year, 1-year, 6-month, 3-month, and 1-month yields are all falling. It's because the duration, the average duration of these deposits is 3 years and less. So if we go forward now, does this start to make sense why you're seeing short-term yields fall? It's because of the duration matching that needs to occur. Now, key differences in this current abundant reserve period relative to prior periods. So let's see how this is compared to the past. During past LSAPs, banks were in the process of building HQLA, so high-quality liquid assets to comply with new liquidity regulations. Higher reserves at the Fed played a significant part in banks' ability to meet these requirements. The current period of reserve creation is resulting in a buildup of excess liquidity, providing banks flexibility to deploy the cash reserves into higher yielding assets. So translation, buy treasury securities, buy mortgage-backed securities, which is what we've been seeing. The total amount of excess liquidity is understated in reported holding company LCR due to transferability rules between holding company and bank subsidiaries, which caps the LCR benefit of excess liquidity held at the bank. We estimate the bank high quality liquid assets have grown 1.2 trillion. And this doesn't rest of stuff on here doesn't matter too much. The current period of reserve creation coincides with historically low term and credit risk premiums. So tepid loan growth and asset sensitive balance sheets will likely require banks to increase securities portfolios, not stocks, bonds. Loan growth has historically been slow in the first couple years of an economic recovery, and they expect loan growth to be low in 2021. It's going to be lower when the SLR comes off in the end of March, and loan balances to increase only modestly. Slow loan growth would further support bank demand for securities given lack of investment opportunities and amount of excess liquidity. So they're saying, look, banks would like to lend, but because lending is too risky and the economy is really weak, they're going to buy more bonds. So record low interest rates combined with strong deposit growth has resulted in bank balance sheets becoming very asset sensitive and creating demand for duration. Banks have historically owned treasuries in this, here you go, short to intermediate part of the curve. Aggregated U.S. G-SIB treasury holdings show that 75% have a maturity of less than 5 years. Now, does this again make sense why there's such demand for 3-year and shorter paper by the banks? It's all right here in this report, my friends. We expect banks to increase securities purchases in 2021, which could be an important source of demand for treasuries. So when everyone says no one wants to buy bonds, the banks want to buy them. Banks have accelerated the pace at which they added securities in 2020, but cash reserves are still at record levels and expected to grow sharply in 2021-2022. We expect steady growth in bank securities portfolios with accelerated purchase if banks rise. Oh, so if interest rates go up like they have recently, then banks are going to buy more bonds because they're going to need them. It's interesting to see that we have actually seen that. Overall, we project incremental bank demand for fixed income assets to increase by $1.8 trillion over the next 2 years. Given historically tight credit spreads, we expect private label securities to remain a small portion of these security purchases. So sticking with, again, treasuries. With low term premiums and yield levels, given banks' preferred habitat, we expect most of the incremental bank demand for duration to materialize in short to intermediate term treasuries, which there is a shortage of supply on. Now, keep in mind, you know, the Fed is buying most of 2 and 3 year and 30 year. They're not buying any of T-bills at all, of 1 year and less. So the Fed's actually buying quite a bit of 2 and 3 year, putting pressure on the banks when they need it. So what you're seeing in this report is, look, banks are going to need to buy a lot of bonds because these reserve asset creation from LSAPs each lead to an increased amount of deposits that they have to hedge against, thus driving short-term interest rates down. Reserve growth is also consistent with increased non-bank private demand. Non-bank private demand for treasuries is affected by LSAPs, which are the mechanism that drives reserve creation. Money manager portfolios are liquefied by selling treasury holdings to the Fed and may seek to redeploy those available funds into more treasuries or other fixed income sectors. So essentially sell one that's in demand and buy something else out the curve. That's effectively what they're saying is you'll see managers that own 2 and 3 year treasuries maybe go out to 5 to 7. Those who own 5 to 7 go 10 to 20. Those who own 10, 20 go out to 30 year. While multi-asset managers can reallocate LSAP proceeds into wider range assets, government bond portfolio managers, including passive index funds, will likely reinvest across, just what I said, the treasury curve due to their investment criteria. So what you're seeing here is, due to all the demand at the short end of the curve, it's going to push people out to the long end of the curve. Hence why when short end goes down, the long end of the curve follows. Not what the market thinks right now is the long end is going to go up and the short end is going to stay low. This persistent demand and increased interest in purchasing treasuries, if yields move higher, could be contributing to the low level of the term premium. The term premium often increases during a recession and early into the economic recovery, but has remained well below historical norms despite heavy increases in the issuance calendar. The abundant reserves environment may be helping keep term premiums low despite heavy issuance. No surprise. So quantitative easing or LSAPs lead to lower interest rates. There you go. A rising reserve environment bolsters growth in money market funds, leading to increased T-bill demand at a time when the Treasury is going to reduce T-bill issuance. In a period of rapid reserve growth, some of the banking system's liquidity is likely to migrate to money market balances as depositors, managers diversify their short-term portfolios. Money market fund investments once remain on the short end of the curve in recent years, and most of the assets has come from T-bills. Hey, that's why the yields on T-bills are going to zero. Where government and prime money market funds allocate to T-bills has increased more than 50%. And yet T-bill issuance is going down. Money market mutual funds now own approximately 40% of all T-bills outstanding, up from 15% a year ago. Increased flows to, so if you're looking for inflation and money sitting in money market, it's not going to have inflation. You want the money to come out of money market. You're seeing all the problems right here from the Treasury. Increased flows to money market mutual funds and their increased allocation to T-bills has driven T-bill yields lower. Potential negative here. This is going to be a conventional. Potential negative T-bill yields driven by an increase in demand could create challenges for money market mutual funds from a business perspective. Really? I didn't see that coming. Abundant reserves and deposit support repo financing of growing treasury supply given current bank balance sheet capacity. The current deposit and repo market capacity reliably supports financing needs across the U.S. Treasury ownership security sectors. Short-term disruption in the repo market is, this doesn't really matter too much. The subsequent LSAPs ultimately increase bank liquidity, creating capacity for repo and treasury purchases. Let's get almost to the end here. Increased reserves are putting pressure on bank capital ratios, which could reduce capacity for deposits and repos in the future. Hey, what do you know? When you have no yield on your T-bills, you can't really pay people interest. Temporary exclusion of the U.S. Treasuries and deposits at Federal Reserve banks from the SLR calculations is scheduled to expire on March 31st. Without this, SLR ratios are expected to drop by 60 basis points or 0.6% in the third quarter of 2020, despite capital growth from curtailment of buybacks. Excluding U.S. Treasuries and deposits, Federal Reserve banks would have improved the leverage ratio by approximately 80 basis points or 0.8%. Reserves were significantly lower when capital rules and surcharges were calculated. If SLR, Tier 1 leverage, and CNET, and I don't know what CNET 1 is, capital ratio requirements become binding driven by reserve growth, banks will be required to issue debt and or retain higher equity to maintain regulatory compliance. As a result, balance sheet availability for deposit growth and repo financing becomes increasingly expensive. We expect these costs will be passed on to depositors and repo counterparts. Now let's look at the conclusions, which should not be shocked by. Reserve balances of the Fed are already historically high and are likely to grow sharply over the next 2 years. We know that reserve assets are increasing. The abundant reserves contribute to a favorable environment to absorb treasury issuance or put demand on buying bonds. And when you see that, it means interest rates are going lower because there is a demand for bonds. Reserve creation is likely to drive strong bank demand for treasuries. Well, because that's effectively what QE is. It's a reserve swap. We expect most of the bank demand to materialize in the short intermediate part of the curve. We've already covered that. Abundant reserve balances have led to growth in money market funds and in turn, increased demand for T-bills, which unfortunately, a sharp reduction in TGA balances accomplished by a reduction in T-bill issuance. So here you literally see them admitting the problem may result in lower T-bill yields, which we've seen earlier in the report could take them negative, and continued growth in reserves may constrain bank balance sheet capacity as leverage capital ratios approach regulatory minima. So I hope this report helps you a lot as you kind of look at the problems of what's going on. Is there's too much liquidity in the banking system, and you see the Treasury is admitting it. And what are they doing about it? Nothing, right? They could say, hey, we're going to increase our issuance of T-bills and reduce our issuance of notes and bonds. Nope. You could hear the Fed come out and say, hey, you know, we see a big problem at the short end of the curve, so we're going to stop buying 2 and 3 year notes and put more emphasis on the long end of the curve. Nope. You're literally seeing them do nothing. And if the short end of the curve goes negative, which it very well can, it's going to create a cascading effect across the markets as this risk on trade of everyone trading stocks higher is going to turn into there's a major problem in the banking system, a major risk off event, and that will drive the long end of the curve massively down and possibly even negative. I'm Steve Van Meter. Hope this helped. I'll see you soon. Bye now. The content of this video is provided as educational information only, is not an invite investment or other advice. Serial is not to be construed as a recommendation or solicitation by our selling security, financial instrument, or participate in any particular trading strategy. This video was prepared by Steve Van Meter. Personal capacity opinions expressed in the video that I'm going to do not reflect the view of Atlas Financial Advisors Inc. or Steve Van Meter Financial.